Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and this is Turning Towards Life. Another week of turning towards one of our sources that we select each week. And just to say hello and how absolutely welcome you are to be here with Justin and with me. We are always every Sunday delighted to sit and wander into this together. And knowing that all of you are out there listening and watching is a complete delight. So thank you for being with us. Thank you for being such a support for this practice. And Justin, thank you for this source, this ever, never-ending source, resource that you are, that you find things like this. It's really wonderful.
Well, thank you, Lizzie. And hello, everybody, and welcome again. Such a thing to be in a weekly practice. And I know, Lizzie, that it's not just you and I who are in this practice. There are many, many, many others who are practicing alongside us by listening to this conversation and reading sources and all of that. So I want to also add my welcome, but also welcome to everyone who's just joining us. Although we've been doing this, this conversation is coming up for being a 5-year conversation already, amazingly. And you're so welcome whether you're joining this week or whether you've been with us for 5 years. It's such a treat to be sharing in this. And as always, as you said, Lizzie, we have a source, some writing that launches us off into a completely unrehearsed conversation. And that one of the great joys of that for me, Lizzie, is not knowing at all really what we're going to get into as a result of reading this, what comes between us. And I suppose that's the point to say for me that this conversation is part of something bigger. It's part of a commitment that we're up to called Third Space. And I was thinking, just as I was saying what I was saying, that there's always a third something here. There's you, me, and the source. And there's also something else which arises in the conversation, which we can never predict, but which isn't random and has its own deep intelligence and comes between us. And that's really the point of this. So this source that we're reading this week to start us is by Courtney Martin. So thank you, Courtney, for your extraordinary writing. And you can find the source and also a link to Courtney's work in our Facebook group, on the turningtowards.life website, and in the notes that go out with the podcasts. And this is called Knee Sounds. The older I get, the more I notice knee sounds, my own quiet desires, dumb egos, baby's sharp intuition, the return of the blackberries, bone-headed binaries. Sometimes I long for an organized drawer or a morning without the realization that one went to school with unbrushed teeth. But then I remember how short life is, how wide my forgiveness, mostly of others, more and more myself. The noticing is mostly small. Sometimes it's big. This life I walk through is not what I expected. How could I have imagined her first questions upon waking, or his tender body? How could I have known I would birth my own much-needed teacher on solitude, or care so much about those two red poppies? Aging is a long, drawn-out experiment in being wrong about how you will live, who you will be, what you will love and see, and love and see, and love and see, and that's okay. It's more than okay. Each day unpromised and fecund, I am worse than I thought, and also better. Humanity too. When the violence is too much, I touch a lot of tree trunks, eat some more bread, watch my kids sleep their sweaty sleep, and try not to let any of it, tragic or tender, feel inevitable.
The older I get, the more I notice knee sounds, my own quiet desires, dumb egos, baby's sharp intuition, the return of the blackberries, bone-headed binaries. Sometimes I long for an organized drawer or a morning without the realization that one went to school with unbrushed teeth. But then I remember how short life is, how wide my forgiveness, mostly of others and more myself. The noticing is mostly small. Sometimes it's big. This life I walk through is not what I expected. How could I have imagined her first questions upon waking or his tender body? How could I have known I would birth my own much needed teacher on solitude or care so much about those two red poppies? Aging is a long drawn out experiment in being wrong about how you will live, who you will be, what you will love and see, and love and see, and love and see. And that's okay. It's more than okay. Each day is unpromised and fecund. I am worse than I thought, and also better. Humanity too. When the violence is too much, I touch a lot of tree trunks, eat some more bread, watch my kids sleep their sweaty sleep, and try not to let any of it, tragic or tender, feel inevitable.
Thank you, Lizzie. There's so much in here, and hearing you read it, it's even different to having read it a few times myself and then reading it out for you and for everyone. I think what drew me to this writing so strongly and is really touching me again now is this line in the middle. And very often the middle is the place, it seems to me, in people's writing where something happens, where the depth gets touched. Aging is a long, drawn out experiment in being wrong about who you will live, who you will be, what you will love and see. And that's okay. And I'm thinking a lot about all the different levels and scales from the what kind of life I imagined I would have and or might imagine what kind of day I might imagine I'm going to have today, from that sort of that scale and what I imagine I will feel, or to the big scale of the world, how all the ways I want the world to be and that I imagined it would be for me or for my children or for the generations that come after. Or this poem is such a kind reminder that it's really okay that none of it was like how I imagined. And then points to me how much difficulty and suffering there is in imagining and then demanding that the world matches the imagining. It's not the imagining that's the thing. I'm really up for imagining. I'd love to imagine all the ways the world could be kinder, deeper, richer, more generous, how I could be all of those things as well. But the moment I hold on tight to them is the moment the trouble starts, because the world just simply isn't amenable to my control in that way, but it also turns out I'm not amenable to my control in that way. So it's very, very relieving to be met by Courtney Martin's writing and to be reminded the thing that I keep on finding out for myself also again and again, which is I can let go of that. I don't have to live in the midst of hard-held expectations and then in the constant gap of comparison between how things are and my imagination. They're often not the same. And that's okay. And I can live that way. I can live in the gap. I can live in that space. So it's a great, and I feel that very strongly. I feel that more and more and more, I suppose. Maybe that's what Courtney means when she says aging is a long drawn out experiment in being wrong. Like maybe one of the things that can happen is that we can just learn to be wrong. We can learn that everything we imagine is probably wrong. And there might be seeds in it which we can bring into being. Mm. There probably are. Of course there are. Each day is unpromised. I suppose, Lizzie, I was also touched by this feeling that I can do this. I really can. And I'm really glad to be able to do this, to be able to be in the world holding on less tight, certainly than I used to.
Mm. Oh, I'm finding it very comforting to have these affirmations, like you're saying, and like Courtney's saying, about being wrong about how I'm going to live. That it feels so hopeful to me. Because of course there's a part of me that also doesn't have, there's a part that has, you know, lots of ideals, but there's also the part that disasterizes as well. So the part that's, you know, determined this is going to go wrong. I have to be wrong about that too. I have to be wrong about having wanted something or expected something, it didn't turn out the way that I expected. I have to be wrong about my expectation, but I also have to be wrong about all of the ways that I got determined that it wasn't going to be okay. And then, oh, hold on, it's not as bad as I think it was going to be. And keeping a kind of a flame alive in me that questions myself on all levels, like lets myself be a questionable person, that I don't, just because I've imagined something a certain way, like she says at the end, just let it not feel inevitable. Like this wasn't, like nothing is a given. Whether, you know, just because I've imagined it a certain way doesn't mean it's going to happen that way. And just living in that knowledge feels so comforting. Because I've lived in that mistake loads of like, well, this is how I think is going to happen. This is how it got described to me. This is what someone told me it was going to be like. So therefore it's going to be like that. Or this is how I've painted the picture in my mind. And it's not. And feeling like, I guess, I think most of us have probably felt let down 100,000 times by that. And for that to be welcomed, for that to be, that's what life is. If that's what life is, that it's not going to turn out as we want or expect, somehow suddenly this makes it really interesting. That maybe my ideas are just rather small by comparison to the miraculousness that's possible. Maybe life has way grander ideas, way more profound ideas, way deeper ideas, like the poppies. I've got some tomato plants in my back garden at the moment, which is like this huge, big, somehow miraculous rainforest. I mean, I planted these tiny seeds and thought, oh, well, I'll do 20 of them because they're probably all going to die because I don't really know how to grow tomatoes. And then they are like there's a whole bed is just rampant with tomatoes. And so it's complete, and I love them. And every day I go and see them and I check and I wonder. I don't know that part of me very well that's that excited by tomatoes growing in our little garden. And to be surprised by that, like falling in love with the poppies or whatever is in the garden. Thank goodness. You know, thank goodness there are parts of me that I don't yet know that suddenly appear because of life. And then I go, oh my gosh, I was completely wrong about myself. I do know how to grow a tomato. I can't, it's actually nothing to do with me anyway. It's them. It's not me growing a tomato. I do some things, but the tomato itself is, you know, there's so much unknown when we step into doing like ordinary things. And so to feel this being wrongness, there's so many ways that I could think of being wrong, of, oh gosh, that's really hard to be wrong. And then this is inviting me into this kind of liberation of wrongness. Yes, please let me be wrong. Thank you. I want to be wrong about lots and lots and lots of things because that feels so alive to be wrong. Because my righteousness is so small. My righteousness is so limited and tense. And I don't really want that. I really want the kind of an erupting life of wonder and goodness knows what's actually happening.
I love that phrase you just used, an erupting life. And I was thinking, sort of occurred to me when I was first speaking, and it's really been amplified and deepened by listening to you, this observation you make about parts of us, which has been in our conversation so many times before, that I can feel that it's really some parts of me that want life to be a particular way, that hold me to that standard, and that hold life to that standard. You know, I've got parts that hold me to, I'm meant to know who I am, and I'm meant to be this way, and it's a great disappointment every time I'm not, and how come people don't see me this way, and all of that sort of trying to make life like really solid, like it had already been etched in stone. Can't everybody just get with the program that's been etched there? And it may be same parts, or maybe other parts that are related, that want to do the same with life, you know, that want to fight against, that treat life as being terribly unfair when things don't go my way, and I can really feel in this conversation, and it's sort of amplified by what Courtney writes about, you know, sometimes just going and touching a lot of tree trunks reminds us. I think trees are really great for this. You know, you sort of get up to a tree, particularly a big quiet one, and it reminds us that we're tiny and the world is vast, but also that we're vast, and the parts of us that try to have life be so certain are tiny compared to the vastness of us. It's a really wonderful practice, that to sort of remember the bigness of everything. And then we've got a chance of meeting each moment afresh and responding to what's here, and responding, because also the world calls on us to respond, not to be frozen in place, because there are things that could do with our creativity and our care and our love and our action and all of that. And so being able to go, oh, maybe I'm not the person I thought I was. Maybe something else is here that I didn't know that could meet this moment. Mm. Some generosity, or some grief, or some who knows what. Maybe this moment, whatever it is, whether it's some big piece of news about the world or some big piece of news about myself that I'm discovering in the moment, maybe none of it was inevitable. And because it wasn't inevitable, I'm not inevitable either. Mm. And my presence in the world wasn't inevitable, but I'm still here. And also my responses aren't inevitable, even though I've got like a ton of habits and a ton of... And I realized when you were talking about that, I can feel how different I feel about that now than at other times in my life, where I can feel in my own body just a whole ton of parts of me holding on like clenched fists. And I know what that feels like, because it feels like a bunch of clenched fists in my body. But I've also been practicing, I realize, seeing if I can... I was thinking about when you were talking about the difference between intention and expectation. So to see if I can loosen whatever expectation I have of this moment, whether it's going to a concert that I've longed to go to for a long time, but I think I'm going to have a particular experience, or where I'm expecting excitement or joy or something, or walking into a group of people where I feel a little bit like the outsider and I feel like I'm not sure what's going to go on, and I've got an expectation this is going to be hard and I'm not going to know what to say, and seeing if I can be kind enough to the parts of me that hold those expectations so that they can have a bit of space to let go, or they can feel held and letting go. And then, but what's left then is intention. So I've got choices about how I bring myself to this unknown moment. I could bring myself being in contact with that of me, which is open and responsive. I could be in contact with my own generosity. I could get in contact with courage. I could, and none of those make the situation go a particular way, but they also allow me to meet those essential qualities, allow me to meet the moment in fresh ways. But usually I'd have it so easy to have it the other way around, which is what I'm really holding on to is expectation and not paying any attention to intention. I'm just like, well, if this goes the way I'm expecting it to go, then it'll be fine. And if it doesn't, I'm going to be, it's a complete sort of flip around of how we can bring ourselves. I suppose I hadn't thought about it that way until we got talking just now, and that's one of the it's one of the gifts of being human is that we have those that kind of level of choice.
Mm. Yeah, as you were talking, Justin, I was thinking, you're talking about expectation, how being in these last years of this world pandemic, and how so much expectation has had to have been let go. Like, nothing feels like, there used to be some things you could rely on, like, I don't know, if I book a flight, it's going to leave the airport broadly at the time that it's said, and it's probably not going to be cancelled. And or when someone has a wedding, it probably isn't going to be cancelled. Or when someone says, let's go for a walk in the park, it probably isn't going to be cancelled by something other than one of us, you know. I feel like there's been such a big thing to just go, oh yes, well, look at this, I'm completely used to letting go now. I'm completely used to letting go of things that I wanted to happen and aren't happening. And then, you know, the world is obviously still in a right kerfuffle right now in all kinds of ways. But I feel like we're entering a new era of where a new normal is going to be established or something, like something's happening. And I feel this piece about intentionality is so important because, you know, when we have let go of so much expectation and we are just going, okay, well, this is the new world and we'll see what this is like. I feel like I could just be terrified, or I could draw my intentions. You know, when there's such change, I wonder, I'm just wondering about the situations that feel shaky and frightening to me now, and that I might have to do that I haven't been doing before, because our lives have got very, very small. And then life's getting bigger again. And I'm feeling really kind of, I don't know, held by your invitation to intentionality being a real support. Like being afraid isn't the only option. Like, I might be afraid, but then there's also more. There's more, like the vastness of me can be applied. There's more of me. So to having this feeling of things, we don't know what we're going to love and how we'll see. We're probably going to be wrong about that. That feels really supportive. And then this intentionality feels really supportive. Of, oh, okay, so this could be fright. Maybe there's parts of me that are afraid, but how can my intention, the intentional part of me, support the afraid part of me and bring some, like you said, some self power into it, some of my choice into it, rather than just feeling like I'm being dragged back out into the world and I don't really want to go, kind of feeling, which I have. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong about everything at the same time as having this huge big pool of vast intentionality that I can draw to it. So I can intend to be hopeful. I can say, right, I'm going to draw on the hopeful part of me. I'm going to draw on the connected part of me. I'm going to draw on the part of me that enjoys the unknown. Like, I can be supported. I can find self-support rather than focus entirely on this is really scary and I don't know how to do it now. It's been too long. I don't know. I'm a non-viable social being. I don't know how to do small talk anymore. I don't know how to be on a train with people who are all miserable like they used to be. I don't know how to, it just feels like I'm unpracticed. I'm an unpracticed human now. And so this not knowing and this being wrong and this intentionality and vastness feels very, very important to what's emerging and how the world is, I don't know, calming back down into something again, maybe. But maybe it's not as well. Maybe I'm wrong about that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like at every level, the wrongness is possible, basically.
So there's such an invitation in what you're saying to to celebrate our wrongness about ourselves and about everything. Because it reminds me of a line from a poem by Maya Stein that we read months ago here on Turning Towards Life, which begins, it seems the world is falling apart and coming together at the same time. So we can't be right about it, but also to remember that we can't really be right about ourselves because of our vastness. And then what I could really feel in what you were saying, Lizzy, that seems so necessary and so true is to wonder about, in the face of that, what do we turn towards in ourselves? Do we turn towards the part that wants to be godlike and in control and know everything? I think that's essentially what goes on for a lot of us. I want to be in control. I want to know what's going to happen.
Mm.
You know, on the scale of the world, where so much is uncertain and always has been and is in its own very particular ways now, and on the scale of ourselves, on the scale of our families. And there's also that in us, which, so we want to know what's going to happen and we also want to be in control of it. But when we start to recognize how wrong about ourselves we are and how wrong about the world we are, there's also a chance for discovery. But one of the things that we have available to us all the time is to see that it is the inherent nature of being a human that we are filled with, I think, what you and I would call in other parts of our work essential positive qualities that we can bring.
Mm-hmm.
So can we turn towards and allow ourselves to bring forth our essential goodness, which none of which makes the world under our control. None of us makes us know what's going to happen. None of us gives control how things are going to turn out. But it is one of the great gifts of being a sentient being, like a human,
mm-hmm.
is that we can choose what of us. We have some choice over what qualities of ours we cultivate and let into the world. And none of that is inevitable, and all of that is available.
Yeah.
To us. And so when you were talking about hope, for example, yes, and one of the choices I have available to me is to find that in me which is hopeful, not in the sense of knowing what's going to turn out, but which is can make contact with goodness and possibility in the world and with our capacity. Or I can find that of myself which loves. And in a way, I think that's what Courtney Martin is writing about, where she writes, how could I have imagined her first questions upon waking or his tender body?
Mm.
How could I have known I would birth my own much needed teacher on solitude, or care so much about those two red poppies? Right in the middle of that feels to me as a sort of deep discovery of there's this kind of essential goodness here, which sometimes takes us by surprise, that we can bring into the midst of whatever situation, whether the world is coming together or falling apart or both.
Yeah.
None of it is inevitable, including our responses aren't inevitable. That's always up to us in some way.
Mm. Yeah. Also really drawn as well to the way Courtney, for me, articulates the preciousness of things. The return of the blackberries and watching my kids sleep their sweaty sleep. These ordinary things that it would be so easy to be asleep to them. But letting them be precious, like you're saying about our essential goodness, like letting essential goodness reach us from all parts of life. The essential goodness, the essential quality of a tree, of a blackberry, of a tomato, of a baby, of an old man, of a pavement with a flower cracking through it. I feel like there's such support there. It makes it okay to be human when we can notice things and receive them as the preciousness that they are. And the tenderness and the tragicness and the all of it feels like it needs to be here, because that's what also makes human being okay. And I really appreciate the that invitation this morning of the noticing and the articulation of the ordinariness, and how held I feel by the noticing of ordinariness, because it's all right here. It's all possible that those tomatoes can be the bed that I lie in, that somebody's flesh can feel like the rest that I need, that the toast popping up can be the reminder of life coming forth. Like there's so much around that could be a support and a gentling and a bringing me back to my humanness. And I feel like that's where Courtney's taking me.
Mm. What a beautiful place to end, Lizzie. And I'm left with gratitude for you and the extraordinary things that you find to say and express and be in contact with in our conversation. And really deep gratitude for Courtney for writing and sharing what she has to write. And I feel like leaving with this wish for all of us that our aging, which is happening no matter whether we're 2 or 52 or 72 or 92, is happening day by day. Let it be that our aging is a long drawn out experiment in being wrong about how we'll live and who we'll be and what we will love and see and the discovery that comes with that. And I feel like this conversation has been a huge reminder to me of that possibility. And there we should end for this week. And thank you everyone for being with us. I want to say, please feel very welcome to share this conversation, this project with other people if you know it would benefit them. We keep on hearing of people who've stumbled across or been introduced to this long conversation are finding it greatly beneficial to them. So it's my encouragement to everyone to feel welcome to do that. And we will, all being well, be back again for another week of this next Sunday.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.